Hi, it's Irene Friedman, and the program is...
It's all about animals.
Oh, we're laughing already. Yes, it's all about animals, and here's what we're doing today. We'll start off with some jokes, and then we're going to start a new chapter in Ginger Pie. No, I'm going to finish last week's chapter. Excuse me, I'm getting ahead of myself. And then I'm going to finish the article I started last week about overweight cats, and then there's a follow-up article to that, how to slim down your cat.
Well, shouldn't you have a fat cat?
No, it's really very unhealthy for them. They could end up diabetic, and it's a strain on their heart and everything, but...
Just like people.
It is just like people.
Cats are people too, Irene.
Yeah. They eat too much and don't get enough exercise.
That's me, Irene. That's me.
But I have a cat that I've been kind of took in back in January, and he's put on 3 pounds.
Wow. What do you feed that cat?
Well, I do what they call free feeding in my house. So it's like raiding the refrigerator.
Oh, so they don't have to pay. It's free.
Right. Okay. Well, how would you like to go first?
Okay, Irene. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Oh, do I want to go first, Irene? What do you call a fat psychic, Irene? Talking about fat cats. What do you call a fat psychic? A fat psychic.
Oh.
You know, you know, when they sit around the house, they sit around the house, Irene.
A fat psychic.
A fat psychic. What do you call a fat psychic? That's kind of an animal joke. Humans are animals.
Does it have to do with Kreskin?
Nope.
Nothing to do with Kreskin.
Nope.
Who used to have the TV show. A fat psychic.
Was he fat?
No, actually, as I recall, he was rather small.
Oh, well, then it wouldn't.
Fat psychic. Oh, there's California psychics, but I don't know.
Yes, there are. There's probably some in New York and everywhere, Irene. There's
fat psychic.
But a fat psychic. What do you call a fat?
Clairvoyant?
Nope.
I thought that was kind of good, but I guess buoyant is being able to float.
Yeah, well,
but
I can float like a bobber, maybe. I don't know. But...
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but what do you call a fat psychic?
I don't know.
What do you call a fat psychic? A four-chin seller. Teller.
Oh,
a four-chin teller.
Okay. Okay, well, that was... that was very good.
Yeah.
Okay. What do... this may be my only animal joke today. What do pigs like with their chow mein?
What do pigs like with their chow mein? Mm-hmm. Well, noodles would be good.
Yeah.
With chow mein.
Mm-hmm.
Chow mein. And what do pigs like with chow mein?
Mm-hmm.
They sure don't like pork.
No, I think that would be... They'd probably get the vegetable or the tofu, I would think.
Yeah, I would think. So, let's see. A pig in a...
What do pigs like with chow mein? Yeah.
What do pigs like with chow... probably a fork. A plate. They like their mouth with it.
No, this has to do with the taste of it.
Oh, with the taste. Well, I kind of like the taste of it, Irene.
Yeah, chow mein's pretty good.
Yes, it is. Let's see. What? I don't know, Irene. I think you've stumped me right
now. Okay. What do pigs like with chow mein? Suey sauce.
Ah!
Suey sauce. Is that a soy sauce? Suey
That's
sauce.
That's pretty good, Irene.
Well, we can thank Johnny B. Laughing for that. Okay, next joke.
Okay, Irene. So, what do you call a computer floating in the ocean? What do you call a computer floating in the ocean, Irene?
Bobbing apples? Bobbing for apples?
Ooh, bobbing apples. That would be pretty good. Okay. We ought to put that in our book. But that's not what I'm looking for. It's not an apple computer.
A computer floating in the ocean.
Yes. A computer floating in the ocean.
A Mack yacht? A mocked?
Nope.
Like yacht and Mack combined?
What?
Instead of a yacht, you're a Mack, but you're a mocked. A combination of a Mac and a yacht.
Nope.
A computer floating in the ocean.
What do you call a computer floating
in the ocean? A robites?
Nope.
Is it a fish or is it a vehicle? Is it ocean life or are we talking about a vehicle?
I don't think we're talking about either one of them.
Okay, a computer. I don't know.
Well, what do you call a
computer? These are tough.
What do you call a computer floating in the ocean? Adele rolling in the deep.
Adele.
Now Adele, she's a famous singer of the last 10 years, and her song is, Rolling in the Deep?
And you expected me to know that?
That's I saw that and I started laughing.
Knowing I would never, ever get that. Knowing I would never get that.
That's right. Maybe Rolling in the Deep's her song. I don't know. But,
I've heard of Adele, but I could not tell you any of her songs.
Okay,
let's see. What rabbit was a famous female aviator?
What rabbit was a famous female aviator? Let's see. Bunny Earhart.
Well, you're kind of on the right track.
Rabbit Earhart.
Work a little with the last name.
Earhart. What was her name again? Earhart. Earhart.
Yeah, yes. Amelia Earhart. Okay, I think we have time for one more round.
Okay, Irene, what do you call a three-footed aardvark? Irene, what do you call a three-footed aardvark?
A tripod.
You could, but that's not what I'm looking for. We ought to put that in our book, too.
Well, I can't say that's original because at the animal shelter, whenever one of the animals has a leg amputated, and sometimes that can't be helped.
You guys make fun of them?
Some people call them tripods.
I'm going to give you a new name here, maybe. I don't know. What do you call a three-footed aardvark?
Well, it eats ants.
Yes, it does.
Does it have anything to do with that?
Nope. I don't think so.
Aardvark.
They have a rather large tongue also, but I don't know if
aardvark.
It has anything to do with that either.
Well, I think it's one of the first words in the dictionary.
Ooh.
I don't know if that has anything to do with it either.
Yeah, it starts with an A.
Three-legged aardvark.
Three-footed aardvark.
I still think I'd probably call it a three-legged aardvark.
Okay, what do you call a three-footed aardvark? A yardvark.
Oh my God. That's a good one. You've come up with some good ones today. I can't top those.
All right, let's see if you get on top this time, Irene.
Okay, well, this is a non-animal joke, because as I was telling you, I think I have read every animal joke ever published, and I've run out of them.
Uh-oh.
Okay, why is monastery food so greasy?
Why is
monastery food so greasy?
So greasy. Well, let's see, I suppose the monks make the monastery food. Maybe the nuns, maybe the choir boys, Irene.
Well, you're sort of on the right track.
And it's greasy food.
Mm-hmm. You have to tell me who's preparing it.
Okay. Betty over there in the corner is preparing it.
Nope.
And nope, it's not Betty. Betty the nun. Nope. Mark
the saint. Saint Mark.
He's not there either,
no.
Is he? Nope. Okay. Well, why is it so greasy?
Why is monastery food so greasy?
Well, because they I visited a monastery one time. Not only did they have the nuns and the choir boys and the monks, but they had their friars also.
That's right. It's all cooked by friars.
Okay. Well, I guess with that, I'm going to go back and eat some greasy chicken.
Okay, fried chicken. That's good. Fried chicken's good. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. You've added so much to the program today. And now we're going to finish this Chapter 12 in Ginger Pie. Here's what's going on. Jerry Pie has the measles, so he can't go out. And Rachel has three things to do. She needs to go sit on a meteor. Well, she's sitting on a meteor, thinking about the three things she has to do. She needs to look for Ginger. She needs to examine these meteors. And she has 2 whole cents to spend. So that's what she's going to be doing today. I found it interesting that, being given 2 pennies to spend, she seems she's, really got it made, and there's a lot she can buy with 2 cents. So I think it kind of indicates the age of this book, which I looked up once. This book was copyright in, 1951. Okay. Maybe 2 cents bought you a lot of stuff then. Okay, here we go. Ordinarily, when she and Ginger came over to this field, they picked such big bunches of flowers they could hardly hold on to them. They had to use both fists. They couldn't even put the bouquets down on the ground. If they did, no matter how carefully they had laid them there, though at first they might stay in a fine, firm bunch, suddenly they would sag and spread out like jackstraws. It was almost impossible to gather them up again. She found the new street and the new houses being built, but the houses were still in the skeleton stage, and there seemed no place where Ginger would be likely to be concealed, either in the fields or the new houses. So 2 of her errands were done. Seeing that the meteors were still here, they were. Seeing whether there was any sign of an imprisoned Ginger, there wasn't. Now she had only to cross another wide, sunny field, go through a dense little thicket, cross a little brook, and she would come out on the street where the penny shop was. As she sauntered along, she listened to the sounds, the hot music of the insects, the low murmur of a small buckle shop in the distance. She hoped she would not hear the whistle. There was a strange sort of whistle that could be heard in this lot. It started low and worked itself up to a screaming high note in a series of gasps, but was a horrible sound. "What is it, do you suppose?" she once asked Addie Egan, who happened to be with her looking for things. Empty cigarette boxes, tin foil, red glass, and treasures in general. "It's the gypsies at 5 o'clock, said Addie. That was all Addie said, and she said it in so positive a manner that Rachel would not have dreamed of asking for more information. "Oh, of course," said Rachel. After all, she had been wrong, and Addie had been right about Villain being villain, and that spelling is V-I-L-Y-U-N being V-I-L-L-U-N. Rachel decided the whistle was a signal for all the gypsies all over the world to get together around the campfire for their pot of stew. Possibly they gathered in this lot in the maple grove. One thing Rachel did not want was to be in this field all by herself at 5 o'clock for the stew gathering, though the spectacle would be interesting. Then suddenly, Rachel began to think about all the tramps, and suddenly the sun having gone under a cloud instead of the familiar field of daytime in which she played and picked flowers, the fields become the perilous fields of nighttime. It would have pleased Rachel simply to go back home, or at least go back to the main streets and get to the penny shop the safe another way. However, she had come this far. The whistle had not blown. It was not 5 o'clock. It was not nighttime. The sun had come out from under the cloud. What was the sense of going back? When she and Jerry and sometimes Uncle Benny sat on their little upper veranda at home on Beam's Place and looked across the street to their own field, watching twilight inch across it, every man they saw there was a terrible tramp with his sacks and burlap bags. But Rachel reassured herself now, plucking a piece of sour grass and chewing it. These were not the evening fields of tramps and burlap bags. These were the sunny fields of daytime. Moreover, all tramps are not bad, she reminded herself happily as she trudged across the field. When a tramp knocked at the back door, Mama always gave him a bowl of soup, a cup of coffee, and a bun, or whatever she happened to have on hand, even apple pie. These tramps usually came in the morning when Rachel and Jerry were at school. However, once one came on a Saturday morning, and Mama gave this tramp a plate of steaming corned beef and cabbage. "My, he won for that," said Mama happily, for Mama, like Grandma, loved to see people eat. "He cleaned the plate," she said with satisfaction. Mama said the trams had her door marked, so many of them came and asked for a cup of coffee. Rachel was familiar with marks on doors from reading the tinderbox. She often studied their back door for the secret mark the trams had placed there, but she could not find it. Oh, it's invisible, her mother said. The tramps have a secret way of passing the news on to one another as to who has a kind heart and will give them a bite and not sick the dog on them. It goes way back in my family, she said, never to turn a hungry person away from the door. Do the tramps have Grandma Mark too? Asked Rachel. Grandma too, said Mama. And she would then tell the story about the poor old fellow in New York. Not that he had come to their door exactly. It happened that one night when Mama and her family were living for a time right in the heart of New York City, they had an extra pork chop for dinner. No one wanted it. Everyone had had enough to eat. The chop was brown and crisp and fresh, and it was a pity not to have it eaten up immediately while it was so good. That was what they thought. So Mama, this all happened just a few years before she met Papa on the escalator, put the chop on a clean paper napkin and carried it downstairs and laid it carefully on the top of the ash can. They pick up your ashes and garbage every day in New York, Mama explained. You have these big cans to put your rubbish in, and by morning, presto, your rubbish has been removed. Not like this town where you have to pay for everything. Then Mama had gone back upstairs and she... And her mama, that is, Grandma, had watched from the window. Presently along there came a poor old man. Did he brighten up when he saw this beautiful chop? And he didn't have to go rummaging through the garbage for it either. There it lay, nice and clean and still warm, mind you, right on top of the ashes. Even so, he thought there might be a catch to it, and he took it to the lamplight and examined every inch of it and sniffed it. It smelled so good, and then did he eat it? Every time Rachel ate a pork chop, she thought about the one the poor old fellow had had that he hadn't had to rummage through the garbage for, and she wondered if hers tasted as good. It seemed to her that this was the best pork chop there ever was, the way it was. Those tramps, the ones who came to the back door for a cup of coffee and the pork chop tramp, happened to be good ones. But there were bad ones, too, her pounding heart reminded her as she entered the dark woods, leaving the sunny fields behind. The woods were hushed, but already she could hear the tinkling musing of the swift and clear little brook at the end of them. After the sunshine, it seemed very dark in the woods, but Rachel did not run because running, she cautioned herself, makes you scared, and she picked her way quickly over the roots and rocks that covered the path. But then, had thinking about tramps make a tramp appear? Just as thinking about shooting stars sometimes made a shooting star appear, or a four-leaf clover in a patch of threes. Anyway, there was a tramp lying under a tree on the side of the path, halfway in the thick bushes, his hat over his eyes. Rachel stopped short. Was he asleep? She moved on quickly but softly, hoping he was really asleep and not merely pretending in order to grab her and put her in the burlap bag his head was resting on. She hoped, too, he was one of the good sort of tramps who knew about the mark on her back door and on Grandma's door and how the marks went way back in her family, probably to great-grandma. And that here he was, this good sort of tramp, just taking a little nap. As Rachel tiptoed past the sleeping tramp, she tried not to think of the burlap bag tramps about whom she and Jerry made up spooky stories. She tried to think only of the pork chop tramp. Nevertheless, her heart did pound, and once she was well past him, she broke into a wild run, leaping across the brook without stepping on the rock steps, and she did not stop running until she came out of the woods into the bright sunshine beside the little penny shop. Then she thought that tramp back there might not have been a good sort of tramp, or a bad sort of tramp either. He might have been the mysterious footstepper, the unsavory character. Here she might have had a chance to get a clue about Ginger, and what had she done? She had run. What color had this tramp's hat been? She had been too frightened to notice. She could tiptoe back and see what color the tramp's hat was, that was all. She could stand on the safe side of the brook, this side, and just look at his hat that was pulled down on his face so he could sleep. At this moment, however, her tramp ambled out of the little side path. He didn't even look at her, but... she looked at him. He didn't look at all like her and Jerry's villain, and she saw that his hat was black. It was not an old yellow one like Unsavory's at all. This was a great relief, for if it had been yellow, how would she ever have got to see whether or not it had the red mark inside the band that the perpendicular swimmer put in the real hat? Thank goodness his tramp was very likely of the cup of coffee variety and not the sort who would steal Ginger. Anyway, Mama had said the person who sold Ginger was probably not a tramp at all, but an unsavory character. So Rachel really could skip all tramps if she saw any of them, that is, on this particular day when it was her special job to search for Ginger, Jerry being sick with the measles. Rachel went into Mrs. Tally's penny shop, and after buying the yo-yo for Jerry, she stood before the little glass showcase for a long time. She was trying to make the impossible decision of choosing between a miniature china doll with arms and legs that moved and long black hair and a penny box of crayons. Lady of the shop did not care how long it took you to decide. At last, Rachel bought the crayons, and they became only a little soft and bent as she sauntered along the sunny streets home. A man was leading his cow out of the fields that she had crossed a short time before. She was glad she had not seen the cow grazing then because she had on a red dress. Rachel had an idea that cows did not like red, though Jerry said it was bulls that did not like red and that cows did not care what color you had on and that she was mixed up. Even so, what with the gypsies at 5 o'clock and the sleeping tramp, Rachel was glad she had not also seen the cow and had not had to think, was it bulls or cows that did not like red? The man and his cow loped placidly up the street ahead of Rachel. As she turned into her own street, leaving them loping along the main road, it seemed to Rachel she had been gone a very long time. She ran around to the back entrance way to see where Mama was, what everybody was doing. Mom was giving some milk and some fish to a stray cat. "Do cats have a mark on her back door?" asked Rachel. Mama laughed and kissed Rachel and stroked her hot forehead. "It does seem so, doesn't it?" she said. "Cats and tramps and what else?" asked Rachel. Mama laughed. "Call him Mr. Pie," she said, the way they always did when they couldn't find any logical answer to a question. And that concludes chapter 12, and next week we're going to start the Yellow Hat again. That's the name of that chapter. Okay, moving on to what I started last week. I almost finished this article. It was about 5 health risks for overweight cats, and it was by Sassafras Lowry. That was the author. She's an award-winning author whose novels have been honored by the American Library Association and the Lambda Literary Foundation. We went over some problems they can have, such as diabetes, high blood pressure, bone and joint damage, hepatic lipidosis, which is known as fatty liver disease, and some skin problems because they can't groom themselves because they're too big. So finishing up, create a weight loss plan. Dr. Lesner encourages all cat parents to talk to their veterinarians about what an ideal weight for your cat is. Most cats should be between 9 and 11 pounds. This is something every cat owner should be thinking about, even if your cat is not yet overweight. Once you know a healthy weight for your cat, monitor his weight regularly at home between vet appointments. You should be able to feel ribs without too much effort, and looking at the cat from above, the profile should be relatively straight. When we see cats that from above look more round than rectangular, that's a problem, Dr. Rusinski says. When selecting food for your cat, regardless of his weight, consult with a veterinarian familiar with feline nutrition. Cats require no carbohydrates in their diets. Most cats would do best and be less likely to be overweight if they never ate dry food, Dr. Rusinski explains. When seeing overweight patients, Dr. Rusinski cautions that she is looking at the kinds of calories being consumed if the cat is eating too many carbs and that she creates an individual diet plan for each cat. But it isn't always just about the food, she says. Sometimes the type of food is okay, but we choose to feed in a different way with food puzzles or other things that stimulate the cat's need to hunt. And don't forget the other side of weight loss, exercise. Even trying to get an overweight cat to move around 5 extra minutes every day can be a great start on a weight loss plan. Set a time and get that feather toy out. And then some sidebars. First, we have alert, age matters. Monitoring your cat's weight is important throughout the lifetime of your cat. From kitten to senior cats, being overweight will impact the health of your cats in a negative way. Dr. Renee Rusinski, a board-certified feline practitioner, cautions that the younger a cat becomes overweight, the more concerning it is for his health. This is because the younger the cat is, the earlier he will start having obesity-related health conditions. Then there are some illustrations of some chubby cats. One is a cat actually sitting on a bathroom scale. And then a little illustration here, slim down your overweight cat, what you can do. They have a chubby cat on a photo in the middle with these pointers in a circle around him. Feed smaller portions more often. No free feeding. Feed on a schedule. Exercise and play several times a day. Feed low-fat treats like cubed cantaloupe. Feed lean meats like fish and poultry. Feed more protein and less carbs. And measure out your cat's food. And now I'm going to start. I may not finish this article by Steve Dale. It's called Get Kitty or Get Fit Kitty. It's kind of hard to tell if it's Get Kitty Fit or Get Kitty Get Fit Kitty, the way they have the letters arranged. But follow these three steps to get your overweight kitty moving pretty by Steve Dale, who is a certified animal behavior consultant who's authored several books, including the e-book Good Cat, and has contributed to many, including The Cat, Clinical Medicine and Management, edited by Dr. Susan Little. And he hosts two national radio shows and is heard on WGN Radio Chicago and seen on syndicated House Smarts TV. Okay. No one ever said losing weight is easy. If it's challenging to lose even a few pounds for people or for dogs, it's even more challenging for cats, says Dr. Ernie Ward. It's physiological. Dogs and humans use fatty acids, and cats use glycogens. That's G-L-Y-C-O-G-E-N-S. Dr. Ward, who is the founder of the Association for Pet Obesity Prevention, says the problem is real. 60% of cats in America are overweight or obese. This increases health risks for a wide variety of medical problems. What's more, millions of cats only live to sit on the sofa and eat, and if lucky, use a litter box. These cats even have difficulty grooming themselves. Current thinking is that obese cats may even suffer from depression. Dr. Ward says that humans get on a treadmill and at least start running longer distances to lose weight. And for dogs, we play fetch, maybe even for too long, but dogs keep going anyway because they want to please us and or because they're enjoying it. Cats are another matter, Dr. Ward explains. Cats are designed to go all out for a few seconds, then cats conk out. Even a cheetah will go all out for only about 90 seconds and then takes hours to recover. So, how can cats use movement to lose weight? The first thing is get hunting. So, how can cats use movement to lose weight? Think of it as movement, not a workout per se, but moving to hunt, which is the reason how we feed cats is important. People tend to leave out food all the time. Most cat homes have multiple cats. It's impossible to gauge who is eating what. The thinking that cats stop eating when they're filled is simply not true. Dr. Elizabeth Bales, inventor of the no-bowl feeding system, says we feed cats from bowls like we eat off plates, as if cats are human. She adds, in nature, cats hunt and catch many small portions, the more the better. The cat's stomach is only the size of a ping pong ball. Also, given the cat's preference, they don't want to share food sources with others. The way which we feed cats not only causes weight issues, we also unknowingly often create all kinds of behavior problems, Dr. Bale says. And I am going to have to stop, so we'll learn about the three ways to get your cat to lose some weight next week, because I'm completely out of time. And until next week, this is Irene Friedman reminding you, please spay and neuter your cats and dogs. Thank you for tuning and listening. Have a great day and a great week. Bye, everyone.